لما الناس مات لحلاله بين الأبد بينات لما الناس مات لحلاله بين الأبد بينات تم أحبابنا
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon, 91.9 FM in Hood River, and 100.7 FM in Corvallis and Albany. This is the Voices of the Middle East, and your host, Gudarz Ektedari. For tonight's show, we have a kind of a pretty full program response. We'll get about the Baker Hamilton report that came out last week, and so far you have heard a lot of speculation and basically the general public understanding is that administration of President Bush is postponing any actual action based on this report, but all the evidence shows that there are some changes in the administration and with people that are moving around, departure of Donald Rumsfeld from Defense Department and John Bolton from UN, and all in all are indication that next year would be a new year in all aspects of the administration involvement in the Middle East, whether it's going to be a solution to stay or whether it's going to be some sort of interim resolution is kind of we have to wait to see. But overall, we are kind of sure that there would be some changes in the whole attitude and whole actions in the Middle East as far as foreign policy and military involvement is involved. Basically, not that the attitude has changed, but more of a result of thinning the military options and probably bringing in some more experienced people and another line of conservatives taking power in the administration and around President Bush. The father advisors are coming in, James Baker and others. And so there would be a change whether that would be a respond or a resolution to the whole problem. I doubt, but still worth waiting and not presume anything. At the same time, there are many changes happening in the region itself. Including probably you have heard that in Tehran there was a conference on Holocaust. We will ask some questions from my guest tonight about that issue. And other than that, I guess let's relax for a few minutes and listen to a little piece of music before I bring up our guest online. And as you know, outside is pretty stormy and rainy, and everywhere in town is traffic. So just relax and stay with us.
Just to the sea.
Welcome back to Voices of the Middle East. As I mentioned, there are plenty of stuff going around, and one of the major issues with regard to the Middle East is the publication and the report of Baker Hamilton Group, and of probably in the past 7-8 days, there have been a lot of analysis and speculation about the report and what would be the result of that on administration's behavior in the Middle East. Tonight, I have with me Dr. Chirita Parsi. He is a president of the largest Iranian-American organization in the U.S., the National Iranian-American Council, and he's the author of the forthcoming book, Treacherous Triangle, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States, which will be out in 2007 by Yale University Press. Chirita has been very active both in work with Congress with his organization, as well as writing and commentaries all over the net and actually television networks. Welcome to the show, Chirita.
Hello. I can hardly hear you.
I said welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's extremely difficult to hear you, though.
Okay. Do you want me to... let's see what we can do. Is it any better, or do you want me to call again?
If you could call back, perhaps with a better line, that would be great.
Okay, I will do that. Hello, Dr. Parsi?
I can hear you a little bit better now.
Okay, hold on. All right, let's start. I hope this time is a bit better. I don't know if I...
I'm going in and out.
Okay, sorry. We're having a big storm around here, and I don't know if that would have any impact on this, but...
I see.
Yeah. I was telling the audience about the Baker Hamilton report and the fact that you have written several commentary about this, and could you briefly tell us what the report really look at the surrounding countries, specifically Iran and Syria, to help America in Iraqi situation?
Well, I think what the authors of the report have recognized that clearly it is going to be impossible for the United States to be able to find any type of success in Iraq if the surrounding countries do not have a stake in the process. Clearly they have a stake in the outcome, but the United States has not given them a stake in the process by basically shutting out a lot of countries and then more or less leaving them with the only opportunity being able to influence events by creating new channels of their own, such as setting up links with various militias and other things inside of that country. So there's a recognition that you need to bring all of these countries into a larger process to be able to get some headway. But so far, the White House has basically dismissed that option and refuses, from what seems to be the case, out of pure ideology, to recognize the necessity of talking to these countries. And it's also very sad to note this, because in Afghanistan, Iran and the United States were working together, and Iran turned out to be absolutely critical in bringing stability to that country. When it came to Iraq, the United States basically thought that it could do it on its own and refused to have any contact with the Iranians, shut off a channel that it exists up until May 2003. And it's basically been left dealing with everything on its own, and clearly it's too much. The United States is not up to the task of being able to fix Iraq alone.
As I understand, there is this report that James Baker had met Iranian ambassador to United Nations. Do you know what kind of commitment Iranian side gave to Mr. Baker?
Well, my discussions with various people who either participate in the talks or know a lot about what happened has basically revealed something that I think Baker himself probably suspected before even going there, which is that at this stage, the Iranians need to have a clear strategic signal from the United States that if they wish to talk to Iran and wish to get Iran's help in Iraq, then that needs to be part of a larger transformation of the relationship between the two countries. because the Iranians are not in the mood of helping the U.S. in Iraq if it means that as soon as their help no longer is needed, the United States is going to go back towards having a very aggressive policy towards Iran and refusing to negotiate on other issues. That's basically what happened in Afghanistan. The Iranians helped the U.S., and as soon as it was felt that Iran's help no longer was needed, President Bush put Iran into the axis of evil. So in order to overcome the bitter experience of that, there needs to be a strategic discussion rather than just a tactical one, because there's really very little in it for Iranians to participate in a tactical discussion.
As it is, the report calls for a more international involvement, international group to study the issue and come with a solution similar to what happened in Bonn Conference for Afghanistan. What countries are suggested with the Baker-Hamilton report to be involved in this, and why?
Well, I think the Baker-Hamilton report basically said that all countries that are neighboring Iraq should be involved, including countries that may have positive roles that they can play. But I think what they've made it clear is that they don't necessarily see a necessity for Israel to be brought into that discussion right away. And much indicates that the Israelis wouldn't be too interested in being there anyways, because they would feel that such a conference would be could serve the purpose of putting a lot of pressure on Israel and forcing Israel to make a lot of compromises that Israel is reluctant to do. But I think it would be wise of the Bush administration to follow this recommendation, because it's really difficult to see how they would be able to get a chance to fix Iraq, get the troops home, and at the same time ensure that Iraq is stable enough to stand on its own legs, unless the regional states and the neighbors of Iraq are brought into the process. And it would be particularly problematic if the Bush administration chose to engage some countries but not others, because that would give incentive to the countries that are not involved in the process to basically undermine that process.
I guess when you say that every all the countries have to be involved, some of the factions in Iraqi politics today, like Kurds, they have issues with, for example, bringing Turkey in. How do you respond to that type of problem?
Well, of course, there's many different groups in Iraq that have tensions and problems with governments in the neighboring countries. But the entire purpose of the conference is to try to find a solution to these different tensions. Ignoring those tensions and hoping that they will go away by themselves is certainly not going to be a recipe for success. And trying to resolve them one by one separately is probably not going to work either, because all of these problems are taking place at the same time. So bringing all these other countries into the process, having a conference, and obviously having intense diplomatic efforts to be able to prepare the regional countries and Iraq for a solution that would come as a result of this process is absolutely necessary. It's similar to what they did in Afghanistan, as you pointed out, and it's similar as states have done in the past when there's been hot spots of instability. Unfortunately, the Bush administration thus far has basically chosen to go it along, and even when it's getting this recommendation, this very clear-cut recommendation from the Baker-Hamilton report, that it needs to go back and actually do a conference and bring the regional powers into the play. Unfortunately, still, the Bush administration is strongly resisting any solution along those lines.
Let's, for example, talk about Iran. I know you have a more study about Iranian possibilities in this regard. What would be the potential of bringing Iranian in, and what forces in Iraq do they have influence on, and how can they help the process, in your opinion?
Well, at the end of the day, the Iranians do have a tremendous amount of influence over the Kurds. They do have strong relationships with Hakim and other Shiite groups. The Iranians can seal off the border more effectively than they're doing. They can exchange intelligence with the United States. There's a tremendous amount of things. that can be done. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that Iraq is going to be easily fixed by including the Iranians. But we know one thing for certain. Unless there is increased diplomacy and the United States is bringing other countries into the process, chances of success is going to be extremely low. That, those chances can be increased by bringing these countries in, even though clearly they're not, nothing's going to be a magical bullet here.
But based on your knowledge and opinion, what would kind of prevent this thing from happening? I mean, what would really discourage administration of getting involved with Iranians and Syrians, probably besides the Israeli opposition to it?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question a little bit louder?
Well, the question I have is, what do you think would prevent American administration of getting involved with Iran and Syria and basically acting upon the recommendations of Baker Hamilton?
Well, there's several different forces that seem to be opposed to the idea of bringing Syria and Iran, particularly Iran, into the picture. On the one hand, for years, Israel has been very uncomfortable with the idea of a U.S.-Iran dialogue, fearing that the United States would betray Israeli interests in such a dialogue. Right now, that exact same fear seems to be existing among some of the Arab countries, particularly the Sunni Arab states, that feel that Iran's influence in the region has grown very fast. They feel threatened by it, not necessarily an existential threat, but they feel threatened that there's a new order in the making in the region. And they are fearful that if the United States and Iran talk, the United States would basically come to accept the fact that Iran is a major power in the region, which is something that they at this time feel would be detrimental to their interests. They wouldn't necessarily be against a U.S.-Iran dialogue under all circumstances, but right now when Iran is so strong, they feel that that would be the wrong time to start it. The problem with that thinking, however, is that it's extremely short-sighted. And if we wait much longer, not only will Iran most likely gain in influence, but Iraq will turn into such a disaster that it might be beyond fixing.
Let me ask you, based on your engagement with Congress and the shift in the control of the Congress in the U.S., how do you see the new new Congress, whether it is under control of Democrats in Senate or not, which is basically the question of today. But in general, how do you analyze the change in the power in Congress, in Senate and House, as far as this approach and in general a dialogue with Iranian party?
I think there's a stronger support for dialogue in Congress than it's been for a long, long time in the United States Congress. And it's mainly because of the fact that the policy of the United States of not talking to certain countries and trying to isolate certain countries has really backfired and contributed to the devastating situation inside of Iraq. So there's a lot of members of Congress that are saying that, you know, this is not working. We got to start talking to people in the Middle East. We cannot think that we can fix everything by us just dictating what should happen. We just don't have the power, and it's completely unnecessary that American blood is spilled for a very, very faulty process. But at the same time, the ultimate decision is not in Congress, for Congress to make anyways. Congress can put a lot of pressure. But on this specific issue, while support for talks is growing on Capitol Hill, and we have had many major Democratic senators and lawmakers step forward and say this, as well as Republicans, it seems like it's one of those things that the Bush administration is most unlikely to do or most uneager to do. So it would require a tremendous amount of pressure from Congress to be able to have an effect on the White House.
One last question in this phase. I'd like to get your opinion on Iran and Israel possibility of having a dialogue. Whether, I mean, from the title of your book, and I know your research on what has been, I guess, done in the past many decades between the two countries, what is your assessment of a possibility of having one day an Iranian and Israeli representative at around the table?
Well, there's actually been discussions between Iranians and Israelis for quite some time. But to have an official dialogue between the two is probably not going to take place anytime soon. There's a lot of different things that need to be taken care of first before such an official recognition can take place. But I think what's most important to understand under these circumstances is that there is a geopolitical rivalry taking place between Iran and Israel, which is a very, very explosive and dangerous rivalry. And if both states think that they can win an all-out victory, that they can have a winner-takes-it-all type of a victory, and they act on that notion, then we can face an extremely, extremely explosive situation in the Middle East. It's not until they both realize that they cannot wish the other one away. Israel cannot think that it can turn Iran into a non-threat by debilitating its industrial base and basically bombing the country, and obviously not only the nuclear sites, but they would target many other sites as well. And Iran has to also come to grips with the fact that Israel is a fact in the region. Certainly there's a lot of Israeli policies that not only Iran, but a lot of Arab countries would like to see change, and there's a lot of Iranian policies that Israel sees absolutely necessary for Iran to change, but there needs to be a recognition that they're both here to stay. Once we can reach that situation, then clearly new opportunities will emerge. But right now, both sides seem to be fighting in a way that indicates that they see no possibility for any type of a compromise or modus vivendi. And that's obviously extremely unfortunate.
Okay, well, do you want to give us a little preview of your upcoming book? Should we wait?
Iran's relations with Israel and the United States since the 1960s. And it shows that there's a triangular relationship that has been in effect for quite some time. And during the 70s, for instance, the Shah had close relationships with Israel, but he still did not recognize Israel de jure. He only recognized the fact that there was no Israeli embassy, there was no Israeli ambassador in Iran, there was an Israeli representative that the Shah refused to recognize as an ambassador. But that relationship continued for a certain period of time, even after the revolution, because Israel was very eager, up until 1992, to establish a new relationship with Iran, because Iran figured very heavily in Israel's strategic doctrine of the periphery, in which they wanted to make sure that they had strong relations with the non-Arab states in the periphery of the Middle East in order to weaken and balance the Arab states that were in the immediate surroundings of Israel. But after 1992, when the Cold War ended and a completely new geopolitical reality emerged, Iran and Israel started more and more see each other as rivals and enemies for the dominance of the Middle East. And that's exactly what we're seeing take place right now.
So when can we expect the book to be
hopefully by April 2007.
By April, okay. I will probably be in touch with you, and we will have another probably program to introduce the book, and I hope to see you sometime in Portland.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Teresa.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.